Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. I saw the light on, so I went ahead. It is the Thursday Drive. Another nice day. One of the last few days of summer. It feels like summer today. It's warmer than it's been for the past few days. And sort of a little tease of what it's going to be like on Saturday. It's going to be a hot one Saturday afternoon. And we'll see, you know, what kind of game we get. Really interesting matchup with Auburn and Arkansas. Of course, we've been talking about that. We will continue to do so. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and our regular third, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, also here in the studio. Ferg, how you doing?
Doing all right. I did my best Bill Cameron impression earlier today. I've been doing yard work most of the day.
So. I did that yesterday.
Yeah.
It was hotter.
It's hot.
I'm glad I did it yesterday. Yeah. I was beat yesterday doing it.
How's the yard at Ferguson Manor coming along?
It's good. I
not much shade.
Not a whole lot of shade. No, I got to a point where it was like the weeds in my pine straw beds around the house had gotten kind of a little out of control, and so today I went all around the house and raked them up, laid some ground fabric down, uh-huh. And then put the pine straw.
Wow,
the pine straw back up.
Yeah, no, what I used to do is just I just spray some Roundup or something into the pine straw and hope it kill the weeds.
Yeah, so
the problem is that stuff can run a little bit into the grass,
what I was worried about. No, I was actually complaining about it. It was just like, man, I hate weeding these pine straw beds. It's gotten too out of hand. And my dad goes, why don't you just take a day and get them fixed up. And so
that's
we
the
did
thing
that.
You do. I mean, yeah. Because the fabric will it'll kill the weeds.
Hoping everything works out. But yeah, I got to do that today. So I feel like we're home ownership.
Yeah. Man, that's one of them. Yeah, you're right. Well, I'm glad you're doing all right. We're here on this Thursday getting ready for another interesting weekend of college football. I mean, it's been very interesting every week. Every week there's been a game or two. There've been multiple games where it's like you didn't see that one coming. And I'm sure we'll have more of that this week. We've got Ferg here with us for the show. I want to remind you that once again, coming up at 5:00, we're going to be talking with David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who is in the final hour of his show on WGOW up in Chattanooga as well right now.
Yeah, it's first time we've gotten to talk to Ferg on this show since the Auburn game Saturday against New Mexico. And I'm curious, you know, you reacted in the moment. You know, we did the podcast Sunday morning. You've also, you know, gone back and done a film session. You've done that for the newsletter subscribers. Like, sort of your thoughts on how Hank Brown did, and like how, you know, I guess you know how you think it could translate to Saturday.
So I've been saying this week, and I think I said it on the podcast on Sunday, but I'll bring it up because I've been asked that question several times this week. Here's my take, and I don't like doing takes, but Here was my take from it. I thought, personally speaking, Hank Brown's performance against New Mexico was better than Peyton Thorne's against Alabama A&M. I liked the way he kind of handled his business at quarterback. His accuracy numbers were a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I just really liked the big difference maker in this game. Auburn got the ball out of Hank Brown's hands quick early on and then kind of, you know, got it to grow in there. If you look at it, Pro Football Focus had him down. Average time to throw in that game was 2 seconds for Hank Brown. It was nearly 3.5 seconds the week earlier for Peyton Thorne against Cal. And so it was a really big difference maker. I thought for a guy making a start. Now, New Mexico's defense is dreadful, beyond dreadful.
They're
awful. One of the worst defenses I've ever seen play Auburn before. But in the stuff that you can control, like devoid of the opponent, like how you handle your business, I thought he did really well. He made several plays where it looked like he, you know, reading the field, you know, making sure guys were coming open at the right time, getting the ball out of his hands when he needed to, not holding on to it too long in those situations. And I thought it was really interesting. He did not throw deep a lot against New Mexico, but when he did, it worked. I think he only had 3 deep shots all game, hit all of them.
Right.
I think if you do that and lean on the running game more, that's a really good formula for where this offense is right now. And, you know, and that's the thing with Hank Brown. If he can keep doing that moving forward, like he doesn't have to be Superman, but if he can be a pretty good game manager, know when to get the ball out of his hands at the right time, lean on his running game, you know, run everything correctly pre-snap and take care of the ball. You know, that might be exactly what Auburn
needs.
Take
care of the ball is a very important
I was about component. To ask if Hank Brown doesn't play well against Arkansas, what do you think went wrong? Like, what would you guess were the things that Arkansas was able to or that Auburn wasn't able to do?
Maybe some of accuracy issues. He did have some misfires and some his ball placement, especially early on, wasn't great on some of the shorter stuff. You know, he's not as he's pressure may get to him a little bit more in this one because he doesn't have the Peyton Thorne ability. I don't think right now in his career to, you know, tuck it and go. He's not that type of player. As much as Thorne is, can be kind of a scrambler and improviser.
People use the word gunslinger, you know, to talk about him, and I commended his moxie in the podcast we did Sunday. But I do worry, like I think sometimes guys who start their career with a lot of confidence. I remember the way Bo Nix was playing really early on in his Auburn career, where there's a belief you can fit, you can fit balls into spots where you know at Even against high level high school competition, that might have worked, might not work at this level. This is Hank's first SEC start. You know, I wonder
first extended time. It'll be against a legitimate defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that the end of the Maryland game is the only thing close to this point.
Sure. So I do wonder, you know, how often he'll be tempted to try to fit it into a spot.
And he only really
try to put it somewhere.
He only really had like one decision where it was like, brother, where are you throwing that ball? You know, and it was the triple coverage one. I think he did a really good job of knowing where to go and putting it in the right spots. It was just, you know, some of his accuracy was not great, especially early on. Now he got in rhythm in the second half.
Yeah. Now I expect Travis Williams though to try to, you know, throw the kitchen sink at him, show him everything. I mean, New Mexico just they'd had a week to try to, you know, iron some things out, but they're just not very good defensively.
And even when you thought they were doing better in the second quarter, they really weren't. One of the things I discovered this week where, you know, because I asked Freeze about it after the game, and I went back after watching the film, and I was like, oh, that was probably a little premature of me. You know, the first half, there was a lot of, man, Auburn's not really running the ball well against these guys. Well, if you look at where they were running, it was like, oh, they only got 2 or 3 yards on this kick. Well, that's all they had left to go get in some of them. Their success rate in the first half was actually pretty good running the ball. It was a lot of, okay, 3rd and 1, you get 2 yards for the first down. Mm-hmm. You're right at the goal line, go in there. But they did get a whole lot better in the second half once they got to kind of know what to do against that mint front that New Mexico was running. Yeah, they're going to expect to throw a lot of different stuff out here. The interesting thing I'm going to see with Arkansas is Arkansas's front is good. They've got several guys that are really talented pieces. That secondary's and the linebackers have been kind of prone to giving up some stuff through the air. UAB had a really good game last week passing. Jacob Zeno had a good game through the air. If you look, I believe Arkansas is 109th in the country in allowing pass plays of 10-plus yards so far this season. They don't give up a ton of huge ones, but they've been giving up chunks. And so when you look at this game, I think what we saw last week from Hank Brown and this Auburn offense, this get the ball out quick and make plays that way, that might be a good way to attack this Arkansas team, loosen it up, because I'm sure, like you were saying, Travis Williams is going to try to throw the kitchen sink at him. They're going to try to blitz him. They're going to try to confuse him. They're going to try to do all that stuff. Hank Brown did a good job managing that, but it was against New Mexico. He's got to do that with a step up in competition. But if he can, I think there's success to be had against this defense.
Oh, I agree, and I think it's also very beneficial this ball game's at home again. You know, people lamenting the fact that Auburn had – there were a lot of people going, it's not good that Auburn has five straight games at home. And for fans and for some people getting tired of things like that – but I think for Hank to have gotten a start, played well, and now having Arkansas coming in here, it'd be a whole lot different if he was traveling to Fayetteville.
It was a tough call, but it was a logical call for Hugh Freeze to make that decision. You know, yes, I mean, I know y'all were talking about this last week on the show, you know, about like, oh, well, when should Hank come in? How much should Hank play? And it's like, well, the best case scenario for him is just start the thing.
That's exactly and that's what they thought. Did.
Yeah. But it's hard to look a 2-time team captain in the eye, absolutely, 6-year senior, and say, "Hey, dude, we don't think the best thing for our team right now is to see what we've got behind him because what we're doing right now with you is not good enough." Like that is a tough conversation to do that and to say that and to make that decision while also knowing you might have to go back to him at some point. Mm-hmm. Like that is a very That's a very delicate thing that you have to do. Like, and yes, this is this is football. This is a business. There's a lot involved in it. There's a lot on the line there. But like, it's also tough to, I mean, especially if you spent the entire offseason saying this is going to be better. We're going to be better with him. We have faith in him. We have trust in him. And then 3 games into the season, you're already pulling the plug on it for now. Like that takes some real guts, and they did it, and we'll see if it pays off. But it was much better to do that than have some sort of timeshare thing on Saturday against New Mexico.
It takes guts. It also takes real dissatisfaction in what you've seen. I think, and it speaks to what Hugh saw when he watched the Cal game again too. I mean, you think back to, Jeremy got benched after 2 games, right? Is that 2015? Is that mm-hmm. two starts, and then Auburn goes with Sean White, I believe, in game 3. Like it speaks to.
I think it was after game 3.
Maybe Jeremy got 3 starts. Maybe LSU was the, LSU, maybe was LSU the third. Oh, because there's the overtime game in between Louisville and LSU. Is that Jack State? Yeah. So Jeremy got 3 starts, but still, like it speaks to the need to go in a different direction in the mind of the offense. And I think the timing of the New Mexico game was probably beneficial because. Oh, yeah. If you'd had certently a road game or an SEC game against a defense. It
would have been much, much harder to do that, I believe.
It would have been much, right. much harder to do right. that without Hank.
You want to sort of ease Hank in, but I mean, not in mop-up duty. You needed somebody who you should be successful against offensively.
I'm going to go against the grain a little bit here, though, because I wonder how creative Travis is truly going to need to be if that front four, and especially those ends, are having success.
And like Jason was talking about yesterday, I mean, they're huge. They're interior.
They're not great pass rushers.
No.
That is not a great pass rushing unit, but they are pretty good at stopping the run. And if they feel like they
statistically, can. Statistically, they're excellent at stopping the run. I think we'll find out a little
takes
more.
Takes a lot to slow down Ollie Gordon the way that they did in week 2.
For sure. Auburn's
but he's been slowed down.
Yes.
This year.
Yeah, I really want to see how that looks against Utah this weekend, the Oklahoma State offense, because they've been struggling with the Doak winner, back at running back. Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, Auburn's tackles, it felt sort of uneven against Cal, although Coach Freeze said, when it wasn't third and long, he thought that there was a pocket for the quarterback to make plays. I think that was one of the reasons a change was made, but it's still vitally important for Auburn's tackles to hold up against Hank Brown.
It'll be interesting to see who it'll be.
Against Arkansas.
I mean, I would assume you're going to be back to your original starting 5.
Well, with Percy at left tackle, which you haven't done.
The opening game.
Yeah. Well,
Tyler Johnson got the start in the opening game.
Oh, that's right.
You opened fall camp.
You might be going back to what you thought all year it was going to be. But
Yeah, it was Tyler, sort of pulling ahead there right before the opener.
And we'll see how it does against an SEC. He does against an SEC defense. But if Percy Lewis can be a guy that can be stable for you at left tackle, I mean, props to him because that's another situation where you get brought in to be the guy, and then then right before the season starts, it's like, oh, you might not be the guy. And now the last couple of weeks he's played well, comparatively speaking, for Auburn's offensive line. And it'll be interesting to see if they'd rather do that, if Too Tall Miller's ready at right tackle. I mean, I thought Dylan Wade looked really good at right tackle last week. But I think Dylan Wade's looked pretty good.
Sounds like folks are pleased with how Joyner played.
Joyner is somebody I think in the running game. Yeah, really
excelled. He's like a road grader. He's a good run blocker.
Yeah, he reminds me of kind of early career Jeremiah Wright right now, where it's like, okay, well, can't. But that's my thing with Joyner, and if you want to lean to him this week or whatever, I'm sure they'll try to get him on the field at times. It was like, is he ready to be a guy that is a left guard pass protector against an SEC opponent? That was the thing about him in the New Mexico game. You go back and look, a lot of Auburn's best drives running the ball. You know, I almost called him Harold Joyner. Braden Joyner is right in the mix of it. Like, he's doing a really, really good job. So it'd be interesting to see. Like, I think they'd love to play Wade at guard if they feel like they can, but we'll see with Tutaw. Now, he did practice fully, it looked like, on Tuesday. He is questionable.
We'll get an updated injury report in about 3 hours.
How about that?
It was sort of neat looking at it last night. Were you surprised by it?
No.
I'll tell you what.
You want to go to break and do it?
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that and more. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So come on in and join us as we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
It's time to plan your next great meal at Acre in Auburn. Chef Dave.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Love for you to join in. Anything, any questions or comments that you have? As we were heading to break, we started talking about yesterday was the first day that we saw the availability reports. Now, they do not want these called what they are.
I'm going to call them injury reports. They can't come arrest me. Was Greg Sankey going to shoot me if I say that? No.
Yeah. So.
Well, and to be clear, like, for folks wondering, I imagine there might be younger folks wondering, or, you know, people in general wondering, like, why is the SEC offering injury reports on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? This speaks to the way sports gambling has taken hold in the last couple of years in college athletics, to the point where now there's
professionalization of the sport.
And there's more concern than ever before about insider access to who's going to play and who's not going to play, to the point where now I was laughed at by Commissioner Slive at a media days for asking if the SEC would consider injury reports like they had in the pros. I think the ACC did it. And Sly was like,
Things have changed an awful lot.
Yes, and now, here we are, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, injury reports.
Yeah. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday nights at 7 o'clock, and then 30 minutes before kickoff of games, teams will
So the wise guys update. Aren't the wise guys aren't trying to, you know, their methods to find out, you know, injury statuses of players to impact gambling.
So for Auburn, I mean, the two players who are listed out are two players that we knew were out. Tyler Scott's out for the season. Brandon Frazier is out and may not be back.
Yeah.
I mean, this season, but he is out for an extended period of time.
Hate it for Frazier.
Oh, no kidding.
Awful.
No kidding. And that's a big loss for Auburn, too. I mean, I don't think people have really thought that much about it. They feel like, well, you got Rivaldo. But Brandon Frazier was the best combo tight end as far as receiving and blocking.
Yeah.
He could be in there regardless of what Auburn was doing.
Wrote about it earlier this week. Big time to step up for Micah Riley, I think. I think he's your best option outside of that. So, yeah.
And I would nominate Micah Riley along with Camden Brown for the has Hank Brown developed chemistry working at the second unit with these guys, and now they've all found themselves promoted to the first. Seemed like he was looking Camden's way.
Oh, absolutely. Camden with four catches, and Micah had the touchdown, so that was nice. I was a little surprised when I saw the report last night. The only player listed as doubtful for Auburn was a player that I didn't even realize had an injury, and that's Amaris Williams.
Yeah, I saw him on practice on Tuesday. I don't know if something popped up this week with him.
Very well could have. Yeah. I mean, those kinds of things happen
that
all over.
Probably is the best explanation for it, but yeah, I don't have any insight on it. And then Cam Coleman, Cam Coleman, Kane Lee, Isaiah Miller, all questionable.
Well, actually, no, Cam Coleman, Antonio Kite, and Isaiah Miller, along with Alex McPherson,
correct,
are the questionables.
And
Kane Lee
they
is
had
probable.
Yeah.
along with Champ.
And both of those guys look good at practice. Cantor Brown on Tuesday in the non-contact jersey, as I wrote earlier this week. That's good news. That's a good sign.
Oh, no kidding.
Because especially if you have a shoulder injury, this is just throw that yellow jersey on and try to limit any kind of aggravation there.
I feel like unless there was a re-aggravation of an injury, everybody from the questionable up, you probably expect to give it a shot.
Yeah, and they might list them as game time decisions or something on game day, but I think give it a shot at least. And Free said earlier this week, Kane Lee could have gone against New Mexico. They just didn't feel like it was worth risking.
What's a little scary is you look and you see Antonio Kite, Kane Lee, and Champ Anthony all with some kind. They're all banged up a little bit.
Yeah, Champ had something earlier this year.
The calf? Limited. Was it the lower body?
Something like that. He was limited in the opener, but he's played a pretty full workload the last couple of weeks. So it feels like that might be something just kind of hanging around with him.
Yeah, it's just Auburn's not the deepest with experienced guys.
How vital – we'll get to Terry in a sec, but how vital is Kane Lee? Like a guy who's
extremely,
he's emerged as maybe.
I think he's Auburn's best cover guy.
He's Auburn's best cover corner. He's Auburn's best cover guy, and in terms of like what it would mean to pull this pin or that pin out of the Auburn defense, you can make a case he's maybe the most indispensable piece on the Auburn defense this season because of what the sort of the patchwork Auburn secondary. If you remove Kane Lee. Like where they're moving guys around, like it's huge when he's out there and he's playing well.
Yep, you're right. Let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Terry is up first. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill, Dan, Justin. How y'all doing today?
Doing all right, Terry.
Great. I wasn't gonna ask this question, but y'all brought it up. When do we expect to see Alex McPherson this year?
So Alex McPherson was dressed out and participating in practice on Tuesday. That is the first time we have seen him do that this week so far this year. So I don't know if it's imminent, but I do feel like he is making progress. And, you may see him at some point this season. But, yeah, we have seen signs these last couple of weeks that he is getting better. Mm-hmm. So we may see him. The good news, I think, for Auburn is that Towns McGee has done a great job. So far, but yes, you're gonna want to have McPherson back there as soon as you can, but maybe not this week. But I think it could be soon, Terry.
And now that Towns has played in three games, I know that their thought process, Justin, had been redshirt Towns, but he has kicked off consistently through the end zone. I would think that even when Alex comes back, let Towns be your kickoff guy.
We speculated when Auburn landed Towns that he might take the kickoff job.
Yeah, I think they were thinking maybe they could redshirt him. That's before any of the problems with Alex. But I think right now that is a great weapon. If you can kick the ball back, into the back of the end zone and not have to worry about anybody running it out past the 25.
Right. The question I actually called in to ask was, what is the relationship like between Hank Brown and Peyton Thorne and their families?
Okay, so I heard about this the other day that when the decision came down last week that Hank was going to get the start over Peyton, I had heard that Peyton's family reached out to Hank's family and said, "Hey, we're rooting for you. Good luck, and we're looking forward to seeing how he does."
I heard, as a matter of fact, I heard a clip from an interview with Hank's dad talking about how close they had become with Peyton's family, and that this was a very interesting bit of an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, it's got to be awkward,
but they're very close. Those families have gotten very close. And apparently, they spend a good deal of time together, the Thorns and the Browns.
Interesting. Did you guys happen to see Bo Nix's comments after the game Sunday?
Yes, I did.
I thought that was hilarious because I like it when the players give a straight answer back to a reporter. Did you see it, Bill?
No, I did not.
And they asked Bo Nix about the interception. He said, "I dropped back to pass, threw it to the wrong team."
Period. That pretty well says it.
Yeah.
He's having a hard time, but it's a tough situation he's in right now.
Take care, guys.
Appreciate it, Terry. 334-321-1390. Who have we got next, Dan?
We got Jay on the line.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to y'all again. You doing okay?
Yeah, doing fine.
Great. Well, I'm over here in the shadows of Sanford Stadium near Athens, Georgia, and hating that part of it. But got some thoughts about our offensive line and want to ask y'all's thoughts on it, too, if you don't mind. I kind of looked at play-by-play, looked at our offensive line play in our last game, and I'll tell you the concerning thing for me, and the whole thing is going to come down to how our offensive line plays, I guess, as far as us scoring points, or a lot of it will, is what y'all have seen at practice or heard from practice from our guard play. It seemed like we had a little rotation. I don't even want to call it a rotation. It seemed like we had some discipline thrown at one of our guards the other night. He was out for a while, and the guy who replaced him did well, and then suddenly the 77 is who I'm talking about. Suddenly he's back in the game, but at the other guard.
Well, yeah, I mean, what happened, obviously, was Dylan Wade moved from the left guard to right tackle last week, and so you had Tate Johnson and Braden Joyner in there playing, and I agree, just from, you know, while I was watching the ball game, it seemed like the interior of the line, which was considered to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, I mean, that was considered to be the strength of this Auburn offensive line, was the interior. They struggled. Right. They struggled Saturday. Connor Lou, I thought, probably – struggled as much as I've seen him since he's
last couple weeks as a starter. Last couple weeks have been tough for Lou, and you know it's one of those things where I think he's got the ability to step it back up. But yeah, it has not been the best of starts for that crew there. And yeah, they're moving around, piecing around, and that's where the Dylan Wade thing gets interesting, because you know, do you need him on the interior, or is he better off at tackle? They he's going to be somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For sure. And us going what looks like going to be facing primarily an even front this time, I guess we've got a shot at some double teams that we wouldn't have had a chance at last week. And, of course, that's going to help, because at times we have double teamed someone. I think we've double teamed some guys at times we weren't supposed to be honest. But the double teams, you know, obviously are good. And these defensive linemen at Arkansas are – juniors and seniors, and they rotate about eight guys in there, and they're big.
They are.
And I just like anyone, I know it's going to be decided down there, and maybe, just maybe, with us again facing more of an even front, maybe we'll get some double teams on the one technique, some double teams on the three technique, and maybe that'll be a big deal for us. I know we've got all kinds of concerns about our secondary and hoping our quarterback play holds up under the bigger lights. But I think I'm just going to look at that box this week. And you got six in the box and good linebackers and big defensive linemen. And I sure as heck hope our interior five can handle it. And I'm with you on our tight end situation. I love there were times we had three tight ends in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not all, you know, the greatest blockers at this point. I hope they can get some experience and some age on them, the ones that hadn't played as much, but even some of the older ones I know seem like really struggled with some one-on-one blocking.
Yeah.
Especially coming across formation, running our split zone kind of look, it looked like, you know, we kind of struggled a little bit.
Yeah, the goal line mishaps, goal-to-go mishaps against New Mexico, I know really got under the skin of the coaching staff this week.
Sure.
And to your point, Jay, like I think there's something else I'm interested in seeing on Saturday against Arkansas, especially with knowing how good they are up front, how good they are down the middle of that defense. We saw in the second half against New Mexico, Auburn hitting the outside, more outside zone, a couple times even a stretch play, like something designed to go outside the tackles. Had some pretty good success with it. Thought that your perimeter blocking looked really, really good. Keandre Lambert-Smith wiped out some guys upfield a couple times. And so – there's a lot, you know, especially if you're going to run these RPOs and you're going to do a lot of this stuff out of that base stuff that Auburn wants to do. It's going to be a lot of inside zone, a lot of stuff like that, some power every now and then. But I think through the first couple of – or through the first few games when Auburn has gone outside zone or made, like, dedicated efforts to hit, you know, go to the edges, they've done really well. And then we saw – It's technically a passing play, but it's not really a passing play. But that little fly sweep to Malcolm Simmons that he almost scored on. There's some more of that kind of stuff. I think they could cycle into this offense and help out, because yeah, if your interior line needs to step things up a little bit, make things a little bit easier for them.
You know, I agree with you, and it seems like we've gotten a hold of a group of receivers who are content to be more team guys and are blocking better than we've had on the perimeter, I think, in a while, to be honest, as a group. Not, yeah. You know, we've had some individuals. But I'm with you on that. I'm just really anxious about our like we've said, our guard play, and if they can play well, if they can have a good game, we run our inside zone and we can run those double teams or those combos on the interior. I think we got a chance to move it in there just enough, and we're RPOing off of that too. So
yep.
Of course that's extremely helpful when they want to sit that linebacker on the backside still or run him out. That's another thing when we run that fly sweep action and it stabilizes that linebacker we're reading. I mean, that really may give us a 5-on-5 blocking situation rather than this 5-on-6 that we're.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate you guys a lot. I'll try to look some of y'all up when I'm in town. I love listening to you when I get a chance to you. And I'm headed from Athens to Auburn this Saturday morning.
All right, take care on the trip. Great hearing from you again, Jay.
And here's the thing: is something Jay brought up there that 5-on-5. Auburn's got to do a good job, I think. You know, they go 5-on-5, 6-on-6 in the box. Like he was saying earlier, if you have your extra tight end in there, like guys got to do their job. It doesn't have to be – you don't have to go out there and just smoke everybody in your one-on-ones. But hold up. Like we saw some of those short yardage situations against New Mexico and other times where you had guys just whiff. Guys just not get blocked. So, you know, it's got to tighten up on that. If you tighten up on that, play a man-on-man – you know, and play a clean game. I like what Auburn could do against this Arkansas team, especially knowing that their secondary's got some weaknesses that they've had earlier in the year. But, yeah, like I thought in the second half against New Mexico, you saw them hit the perimeter a lot more, and I thought the tight ends did a good job, some of them, of getting into the second level and really helping out, especially against that mint front, you know, trying to isolate some guys on the perimeter.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson. And we'd love for you to join in. All right, we've talked, it seems like, mostly about the Auburn offense versus the Arkansas defense. I think Auburn's got an interesting challenge defensively against the Arkansas offense. Man, Jay was talking about the Auburn offensive line and some concerns he has there. Arkansas now has a very veteran offensive line. I guess they got three transfers starting there on the offensive line, one of whom Auburn really really went after.
Fernando Carmona is the guy they wish they had for sure, and Arkansas ended up landing him.
Yeah, because somebody a couple of days ago was saying, well, Auburn didn't try to get any other linemen. Yes, they did.
Oh, God, yeah, they did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not 100% sold on this Arkansas offensive line. I think they're better. And Hugh Freeze saying that he thought this is the most improved unit he's seen. They gave up a lot of pressure to UAB. They gave up a lot of pressure to Oklahoma State. And if you go look, Taylen Green had a pretty rough game against UAB throwing the ball. And UAB got in his grill a good bit in that one. So I'm really interested to see if Auburn can really get after the quarterback in this game, make some negative plays. Now, priority number one against Arkansas, slow down that running game. Their running back has been going nuts so far this season.
Yeah, he's averaging 130-plus.
Yeah, he's had 120 in each of his first three games. Yep. He's off to a great year. You know they're going to want to lean on that. You know Sam Pittman likes to do that. But the thing for Auburn in this one, I think there are opportunities here to get after guys in the trenches, get to the quarterback, affect Taylen Green, because I look and
does,
I see.
Does Auburn have the players to do that? That's the thing I wonder. I mean, the defensive
Keldrick Falk leads the SEC in pressures. I think he's a guy that can get after. It's just the last game against the New Mexico game, a lot has been made about the New Mexico game, and I get it. Auburn did not stop the run like they should. They didn't contain like they should. It wasn't a good defensive game at all. I think some of that was the strategy they employed against them. I think you use lighter boxes and drop dudes into coverage more often. You know, Jalen McLeod and
they definitely
Kieran Crawford. Jalen McLeod and Kieran Crawford went into coverage more often.
Yeah,
more often than they did.
It seemed every play that I noticed – they were dropping.
And it was
coverage.
A conservative plan. It was like, well, we don't have to commit as much. We're gonna try to prevent the big play, the big scramble by keeping everything in front of us. Obviously, it didn't work.
They've used McLeod as a spy with mobile quarterbacks now, because that was the approach.
Which I think is a good idea.
That was the approach with the Alabama A&M game, too, and I wonder how much they do that.
I just don't build the whole plane out of that.
Yeah, I wonder how much they do that Saturday with a guy who can hurt. Yeah, I mean, Green can hurt you with his legs. He is also not necessarily somebody you want to stand back and let. I mean, he had 400-plus yards through the air against Oklahoma State. You don't want to just let him.
Complaining this week about having three down linemen, two linebackers as light. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they shouldn't do that. But I'm pretty sure they're not going to do that against Arkansas.
You do that against a team that has runs a running a back 12, and runs it like that. No,
runs a lot of 12 personnel. You don't want to do that. It's pro style. It's going to look different. They played kind of third down mode against New Mexico because, quite frankly, New Mexico was kind of playing in third down mode every time they were out there because of the talent disadvantage. But, yeah, I mean, I think Calvert falls off. I mean, he is having a phenomenal start to the year. Mm-hmm. And
I don't disagree there. It's just there.
You need more out of those edge rushers. You need more about those Bucks. I keep wanting to call them Jacks. You need more out of those Bucks. Find some way to get that interior line. But those tackle, Carmona's had a pretty good start to the year. The other tackle that I'm blanking on for Arkansas has been not great in pass protection statistically this year. And so just find ways to get after those guys.
See the
knowing, but prior one's got to be to stop the run.
See the guy that was at Florida? And
yes.
Yeah.
And they've got, three, four of their starters on the offensive line are transfers.
Mm-hmm.
They had great success. Arkansas Pine Bluff, they murdered them, and everybody watched it. They got off to a really good start against Oklahoma State.
Oh, they had a really good first half, almost complete first half.
Oklahoma State started firing back in that game. Then you look at the UAB game last week. If you just look at the stats from that game, you would think, just the raw stats, you would think UAB would have won that game.
UAB, I thought UAB, they moved the ball pretty darn well against them. I wonder.
I saw this. Jacob Zeno completed 76-77% of his passes. They had four drops in that game. His adjusted completion percentage was nearly 90% in that game.
See, I always wonder, and I just this year I feel like there are more instances of teams just being up and down, depending on who they played last week, who they've got next week, and you don't have an awful lot of. You just don't have an awful lot of teams that have so many players that have been together for a long time.
Yeah, no.
So I feel like the swings, it's almost like mood swings can be wild. Yeah, and they have been thus far.
Look, we all thought coming into the season Georgia was just going to be, it's Georgia in the field for the national title race.
And then who didn't think Georgia was just going to destroy Kentucky last
especially
week?
After what Kentucky did against South Carolina. And then that happens. So, again, it's just like, I've told people this week as well. I wrote about it in the mailbag. Last season, everybody had Auburn left for dead after New Mexico State, and they should have beaten Alabama. It's going to swing right the way. And again, especially with this team, when you have so much young talent and so much new that you're trying to do and you're trying to build something moving forward, there are going to be swings. I think the comfort, if you're an Auburn fan, if you're like, man, there's no consistency, it's kind of riding up and down. If Georgia can have a swing like that, anybody can.
Right.
And so that's some promise, I think, for you this year. And then, Arkansas, they're 2-1. Everybody's looking at their stats. I hate because I've been on radio a few times this week, and somebody will be like, they'll come into it and be like, well, Arkansas's got the fifth best offense in the country. And I was like, guys, you don't need to look at what happened in that Pine Bluff game. Right, they did move the ball pretty well against Oklahoma State.
Oh,
for the
600 plus total yards of offense in the Oklahoma State game, and I mean only one three and out in that one. Probably win.
Took a step back last week, though.
Did take a step back. I mean, the one interesting note from the Oklahoma State game, which gets lost amid everything that happened there, two missed makeable field goals for Arkansas played a big role.
Special teams. Auburn should have the advantage.
Arkansas missed
makeable field goals, and now you're playing in Jordan Hare. Good luck.
Arkansas went in the portal and got Kyle Ramsey, the kicker out of Abilene last year. Started his career at Houston. He's 18 for 18 on extra points this year for Arkansas. That includes the Pine Bluff game. But they also had two missed field goals late against Oklahoma State. I believe missed a 44-yarder as time expired that would have won the game. Instead, it goes to overtime where Oklahoma State wins. that's you know, I'm sure there will be. And I'm sure there'll be nerves aplenty on the Arkansas side if they're kicking meaningful field goals in the second half of this game.
And I hate to be the guy that's going to, like, oversimplify football here. But, like, I looked at Arkansas. You look at Arkansas last week against UAB, and you look at them, what happened to them against Oklahoma State 2 weeks ago. They're prone to mistakes. They've had turnover issues. They've had some penalty issues. They've had some just kind of not clean play. You look at Auburn, that's kind of been their story so far. And, like, you don't want to make it overly simplistic, but like I said, but, like, the cleaner team probably wins this game.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of penalties and turnovers, the issue is Auburn has not been good in either of those areas to start the year. Neither has Arkansas, but Auburn's got a really – there's a lot of pressure, especially if you're in your home stadium.
I miscounted, and I'm not trying to pile on the young man, but so Ramsey missed a 41-yarder with 12 minutes to go. He missed a 45-yarder as time expired.
Yeah, and that one he had plenty of distance. He just, and it looked like it was good, and just was wide.
And I'd forgotten that he missed a 46-yarder in the first overtime.
Three missed
field goals in the final 12 minutes and overtime in that Oklahoma State loss on the road. That's, you know, even though it's probably beneficial for Arkansas to have been on the road before. That's sort of a nightmarish ending for a special teams unit,
mm-hmm.
and you could need that guy to make a big kick. You probably will either this week or next week against A&M, and that's got to be something that's given them a little bit of pause.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Again, don't forget David Pascal joins us at the top of the hour at 5:00. But until then and afterwards, we'd love to hear from you here on the Thursday Drive.
If you truly care about your feet and want to make them happy, check out.
Welcome back into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, and Justin, let's get to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. Y'all were talking about McLeod spying on the quarterback and all. I mean, if Auburn does this three-man front, especially with Isaiah Rakes on the end, and uses McLeod to spy, Arkansas will have 600 total yards at the end of the game. As of right now, I would say DJ Durkin, I would give him either a C-minus, the lowest C-minus you could get, or a D-plus. The first half against Cal was abysmal. Sure, they only scored 14, but they kept the ball.
Yeah, they had almost 300 yards total offense in the first half.
Yeah, yeah. Auburn just said that. I wish somebody would show a stat on Auburn when they run a three-man front. Not just this year, but any year. If Auburn had Tracy Rocker, Fairley, and Andre Bruce, I'd say, yeah, let's do it. But Auburn doesn't have anybody like that. But McLeod, I think McLeod would finish second in sacks on the team last year behind Harris.
I think that's right.
25 yards out from the football. Not a good look.
No, well, we just talked about it a little bit ago. I mean, I can't imagine Auburn employing that kind of defensive philosophy this week.
You would think.
That's what.
Yeah, well, if they run a three-man front, they need to be bringing Asante or another linebacker. But rushing three, even if it's third and long, the guy just sits back there and picks us apart every time.
Well, if you got a three-man front against Arkansas's running game, then you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, and to your point, Brett, like, yeah, I think especially if your secondary is struggling the way that Auburn's has, it's young and thin, it's has been prone to busting. Like, I don't know if you want to necessarily, you know, go three, you know, rushing three, because it doesn't seem like it doesn't help anybody, especially if you want somebody to, you know, get the ball out of their hands as quickly as possible.
And I would wonder too, Brett, with a four-man front, you're playing two interior guys, and I wonder if Auburn feels like they've got two interior guys that need to be on the field a lot right now all the time. Like, you know, you kind of want to – I mean, I wonder if they want to – I mean, I don't know how much this plays a role in the decision to go with a three-man front, but –
Well, it depends on what Arkansas is doing or what you expect them to do.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that maybe Auburn, you know, maybe some of that's out of an attempt to preserve the defensive, the interior defensive players that they have that they feel good about.
Preserve them for what, Dan?
Well, I mean, to make sure you're not overusing them in the first half or giving them too many snaps early. So you go with the three man front and sort of rotate them in and out.
Well, I tell you what, if Auburn does that and they preserve them in the first half, you ain't got to worry about the second half.
Yeah. No, Arkansas makes sure of that.
All the Auburn fans will be walking to their tailgate. Y'all have a great day.
All right, Brett. Good hearing from you. We're just about out of time here for hour number one. We're going to check in with David Paschal. Yeah, I knew it was about time. And we're going to check in with David Paschal when we come back early in hour number two. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Hope everybody doing well on this Thursday as we head into hour number two of the show, which is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'll go ahead and head to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Just wrapped up his show over on WGOW in Chattanooga. And that, of course, is David Paschal. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bill and Dan. Hope y'all are doing awesome.
Doing just fine. I mean, we were talking about this a little earlier, how you have perceptions, and those perceptions can be wildly off here, especially early. And I think even more especially this year in college football, because you have so many new faces and don't really know the chemistry of teams and how they're going to react to either playing very well or very poorly, as evidenced by the Kentucky-Georgia game this past week. So it makes it for interesting weeks. Maybe we'll have a better gauge. I'm sure we will as the season goes on. I just don't know exactly when we'll really know what to expect from most teams this year.
Yeah, and it's also the different year where, because the game started on August 31st, you've got some schools that are already having that open date. I know Kirby Smart talked about it yesterday on the SEC teleconference, just about how weird it is, because typically, you play the 12 games and have the one break, and Georgia would always be right before Florida, just like Bama before LSU, and that's a unique dynamic to this, too. I mean, Ohio State's already been off. They were off last week, but... Yeah, I mean, I do think, and it's, the other thing that you're starting to notice, Bill, about this year is just the schedules, and there just really does seem to be a disparity in the roads that some of these teams have to take.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You take just the two SEC newcomers. I mean, the Texas schedule in conference play is much easier than the Oklahoma schedule. I mean, the fact that Oklahoma has nine games left and five of them are against teams ranked in the top seven right now, and they've got a sixth against LSU, which is 16th. So, that's the other thing, is just you're starting to notice that, whoa, these schedules are really, really different.
But just wait, next year they'll play the same teams.
No, it's an odd position for us to be in, David, because we've always talked about Auburn as a team consistently, like in division play. Auburn consistently had as tough a draw as anybody because you were playing the SEC West and Georgia every single year. And now, I mean, not that Auburn's schedule is easy or anything like that, but it's a good year not to have Texas on the schedule if you're in the SEC. It's a good year not to have Ole Miss on the schedule if you're in the SEC.
It's probably not terrible not to have LSU.
Tennessee's
oh, yeah, not right. on the Auburn schedule this year. So, I mean, it is funny how now some other teams are dealing with those aches and pains.
You know, and it's interesting because up here at Tennessee, I mean, they did a good job. These are it's how many years it seems like we've been dealing with bridge schedules. And, you know, obviously this is another one, and but they did to Tennessee's favor. I mean, they did give them, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. I mean, you could argue that Tennessee's five biggest rivals mm-hmm. are on their schedule, which is a good thing because we all want the tradition. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the random games that they gave Tennessee, you know, you're talking about Arkansas and Mississippi State who were picked just above Vanderbilt. And, you know, I think Arkansas is playing a little bit better than you know, just a bottom feeder. But, you know, I think Tennessee caught a break with just the random teams that they were handed this year. And, like you said, everybody's got to play either Oklahoma or Texas. And from the looks of things, you'd definitely rather play Oklahoma, which Tennessee gets this weekend.
Yeah, and I think if you're Tennessee, you know, I think Tennessee's a machine right now. And they're gonna you know, look like one of the better teams in the country. But, like, if you're going to have to play Oklahoma, maybe play Oklahoma when they're still trying to figure things, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It really does seem like this OU team's still trying to figure some things out, and that's going to make for a very interesting game Saturday, because if we've seen anything from this Tennessee team is, boy, they can put up points on you in a hurry, and I want to know how Oklahoma, even with a good defense, can keep up.
Yeah, and it's wild because if you go back a decade, Tennessee went out to Norman, and it was reversed. Tennessee mm-hmm. was trying to build things under Butch Jones. They had this real patchwork offensive line. Oklahoma was established under Bob Stoops, and Justin Worley, who was Tennessee's quarterback in that night, got sacked five times through a couple of interceptions. Well, now, to your point, Justin, it's very different. It's you know, Tennessee's got six multi-year seniors on the offensive line and five multi-year seniors on the defensive line. And it's that defensive line where Oklahoma's got five new starters. So that is absolutely the area where Tennessee has the ability to capitalize. Because I'm like you, I think Oklahoma is still kind of finding their way. That 16-12 win over Houston, where they had to punt eight times and only had 249 yards, is not exactly the most impressive showing of all time. So, and to your point, Tennessee's just been rocking. So I really do think if Iamaliava can handle that first quarter and whatever happens early in a hostile environment, I think Tennessee could get like a 2-touchdown win.
And Josh Heupel is he's pretty motivated about heading back to Norman.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think he's, to his credit, I think he's been very loose. You know, he had that line about you know, on Monday he was asked, what do you think the atmosphere will be like? And he's like, oh, I think Oklahoma will be incredibly quiet when we have the ball, out of respect to me. I mean, so I think he was having fun with that.
I'm curious to see, because it's been so – because Tennessee's offense has been so productive so far, I want to see what it looks like if Oklahoma can slow them down early. Like, what kind of – you know, if Tennessee faces early adversity offensively, can they power through it? Does it – short circuit things that had been working so well early on. Oklahoma, it's crazy to think Oklahoma's strength is probably on the defensive side, because that's a team
that,
where
that hadn't been the case for a few years.
No, it wasn't the case when Lincoln Riley was the coach by any stretch. But Brent Venables has put his imprint on that defense. It's we had was it Max who told us over the summer, Justin, that who had the stat that there is not a Lincoln Riley signee on the Oklahoma defense, and they have completely cycled every Lincoln Riley player off that team, and it's entirely a Brent Venables signed group on that side of the football. I want to see what it looks like against, I mean, one of a
as
top
scary an offense as they're going to see,
a top tier college football offense.
Well, and Dan, to your point, I mean, the only time that Nico Iamaliava has been stressed to this point is he threw a pick six against NC State and then came right back and led a really quick touchdown drive. But even that pick six that he threw, it was a 37-3 game, and that made it 37-10. So he's hardly been in a, you know, in a 20-20 game with 4 minutes to go.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and so the first few minutes of that one, as is the case with so many games, going to be very important. You've got a couple of other SEC matchups. We were talking a while ago. It's interesting to see the availability reports for some games, because there hadn't really been many conference games, and we hadn't had a chance to see that. But we'll get to the Auburn Arkansas game in a little while. And look, Missouri Vandy, I don't think is going to take an awful lot of time as far as evaluating who you think's going to win.
You know, Vandy lost at Georgia State last week in front of 14,000 folks.
At the buzzer. We watched the end of that.
I thought they'd pulled it out.
The three of us were crowded around a phone in the press box on Saturday night watching Georgia State drop one in the bay. Shout out to Del McGee getting the win. There. I mean,
y'all were the ones watching that one.
We used to talk to Dell when he was, a high school coach at Carver. Yeah, like in the listening area. Now he's winning games at the former Turner Field.
The point spread.
Well, and Georgia State does have. If you're just, a casual to fairly serious SEC fan, Georgia State actually has one of the most recognizable coaching staff, because mm-hmm. Jim Chaney, who was offensive coordinator at Georgia and Tennessee, is their OC. Kevin Shear, who spent time at Bama and Georgia coaching, he's their DC. A kid from up here, Will Healy, played high school football in Chattanooga, and then of course he went to Austin Peay and then Charlotte. He was actually the FCS Coach of the Year, like back in 2018 or 19 mm-hmm. or something like that. But so it's a very familiar coaching staff that Del McGee, to his credit, has assembled.
Yeah, but that was a really, really tough one for Vandy. A chance to start 3-0, because there's not much chance that they're going to be 3-1.
No, Missouri, that Missouri-Boston College game, I was kind of just keeping tabs on it. I don't know a ton of the specifics, but, BC showed that they're certainly not bad when they went down to Tallahassee and just kind of really handled them with ease. So who knows? Maybe we'll look at that later as a better win for Missouri. I know they lost some style points and some balloting points in the polls with only winning so close. But, again, that's kind of like we were talking about earlier. That Ole Miss and Missouri just have really nice schedules to get to that 10-2, 11-1 mark and get in playoff consideration.
Want to see what it looks like with Missouri. I think it's bye week after this, and then they go to College Station. Mm-hmm. And want to see what it looks like when they're on the road against top 25 SEC opponent at A&M.
Yeah, we've got to get your thoughts on. We're waiting for it to see if both trains collide in the Florida Mississippi State game there in Starkville. I would imagine the Gators,
if
Billy
one train,
Napier probably for sure, glad to get out of Gainesville this week.
One train leaves Gainesville.
I just wonder if he'll be welcome back.
9 a.m., moving 55 miles an hour, and another train.
Yeah, to your point on the, Bill, on the road, you've seen examples of that, where teams just play better. And, there can't be much fun in getting booed at home, and Florida has been roundly booed twice now in the Swamp, and I think we brought this up last week. With 16 teams, it just gets getting tougher and tougher to keep tabs on everybody. But, yeah, that Toledo-Mississippi State score was one that just was really eye-popping. And it just kind of, the fact that I was watching a team from the same conference get beat 71-0 and it was 65-0 at halftime, it's like, boy, the teams that schedule Kent State and Akron sure know what the heck they're doing compared to the teams that schedule Toledo, because Toledo's always at the top of that league, and Kent State and Akron are always nasty. But, yeah, that was a bad loss for Mississippi State. It's an 11 a.m. game out there, their time, and, gosh, who knows how many empty seats there will be. You would have to think Florida's just a little bit more talented than Mississippi State, a team trying to build from scratch. So, I like Florida in that game, but goodness gracious, the upheaval if Florida falls in that one.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Florida is definitely, got to be the favorite in this game. But we've said a couple of times, if they don't win, I can't imagine Billy Napier being the Gators head coach after their open date, which comes up after this weekend.
I'll tell you what, I would posit that Mississippi State – in the second half of the Arizona State game, granted they were down 27-3 when this rally started, but in the second half of the Mississippi State game, in the second half of the loss at Arizona State, they've looked better than Florida has at any point this season. Like, you think about, what I mean, was the getting blown out by Miami?
But then came Toledo.
Yeah, sure. No, there is the loss at home to Toledo where they looked abysmal. But no, I don't know what to expect in this one.
Well, we keep talking about how college football has changed and how we're in this very different world. Florida could be a really big early test case because, Bill, you mentioned the open date. Mm-hmm. What if Mississippi State does win? Heck, what if you're right? What if they play like they did the second half of the Arizona State game? What if Mississippi State wins this game 31-14 and Florida makes the move? You could have that entire roster say, well, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm protecting a redshirt year. What if all of a sudden Florida doesn't have enough bodies to put out there? I mean, this could be really weird.
I had not thought about the fact that you're right. Four games. Anyone could retain, I mean, that has, you know, that isn't in their sixth year or whatever, could retain that year of eligibility. So
I mean,
that may be something that has to be considered.
We had an SEC women's basketball team decide to pull the plug on an entire season a couple of years ago amid injuries and COVID, although I don't think COVID was the primary factor. Obviously, the numbers are different when you're talking about a football team doing that. But if things went poorly this Saturday, I don't think you said anything that feels like science fiction, David. Like absolutely, those kind of questions could come up.
And the other part of it too is, I mean, and this is no knock, but I just don't know if there's anybody. If you get rid of a Billy Napier, who, let's face it, was really, really good at Louisiana, but I don't know who on that staff is any better. And so there's that dynamic too.
Yeah, there's got to be an interim if you do make the move. You're right.
Right. So I mean, I would think even though the timing makes sense, the new landscape of college football makes sense for Florida to keep them a little longer.
And you mentioned Scott Strickland, our old friend last week.
Right.
I mean, this is a very tough situation too. Is Scott going to get the opportunity to, I mean,
well, it's easier when there's no president.
Well, that's true. But I mean, this is a strange situation down there at Florida as they don't have a president, and Scott's hires in football haven't turned out the way that Gator fans have expected. So,
well, and since he hired Mullen, they've been 1-5 against Georgia, and they've been 2-4 against Kentucky.
Wow. The 2-4 against Kentucky. I mean, the 1-5 against Georgia, I know, burns them, but 2-4 against Kentucky is absolutely unacceptable for Gators. I know that.
Exactly.
Man. All right, Auburn, Arkansas. This is one, I mean, we're looking forward to getting the feeling from outside here because I don't think any of us really have strong feelings or feelings about one team being obviously better than the other. There are questions about both teams coming in. This is a critical ball game, I think, for both teams. Looking at Arkansas' schedule, you were talking about schedule not necessarily being balanced around the league. Arkansas, if this has got to be one of the most winnable games, Mississippi State and this ball game, and they're both on the road, are probably looking like the most winnable conference games on Arkansas' schedule.
Yeah, this is, y'all probably won't like my analysis. I do think it's, I mean, it is one of these games that is really hard to pick. It really is. And I would be concerned if I'm Auburn at just the guys at Las Vegas that have the big hotels and the nice houses. You know, it's like a 2.5-3 point spread in Jordan Hare. And this is a rematch of a game that was 48-10 last year that was 21-0 in 9 minutes. I even though Hank Brown had a nice, solid debut, I think we can all agree it came against a team that is not very good.
That's
and
being
it was
nice.
A game that actually was closer than it should have been for a lot of that ball game. And then on the flip side, I think the transfer portal additions that Arkansas has made, especially at quarterback, I mean, you saw them go out and maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe Kansas State's the best Big 12 team, but if it's not Kansas State, it's probably Oklahoma State. And you saw Arkansas go out there and kind of, for at least for a little bit, dominate them. And they let that one get away. They've already had that big road game going to Stillwater. Mm-hmm. I know I've been to both places, and Jordan-Hare is much larger and much louder. even though Oklahoma State, they're on top of you pretty good. But I'm a little scared on Auburn's behalf of this. I picked Arkansas 27-24. Like I said, I think this is going to be a heck of a game. I just think I'm a little more comfortable, as weird as it sounds. I don't know if it even sounds weird. I'm just a little more comfortable with Arkansas at quarterback right now.
They're more proven.
Brown had a solid debut, but now what do you do in a big-time matchup like this where these guys are as good as you?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that completely. I feel like it's going to be a pretty tight ball game, which at least will be a change for the last couple of years where the road team has just blown out the home team.
It's so fun here in the echo chamber, though, David, because I'll talk to people who think Hank Brown is Tom Brady, and then I'll hear from people who are like, you know, I do need to see him against at least one SEC defense before I'm ready to hitch my wagon to him.
Well, and you know, I'm certainly pulling for him. He's a Tennessee kid. You know, he played in the same same classification in the same little division that I've had a kid go to Baylor school, and now I've got a kid at Macaulay school. So we're obviously familiar with where Hank Brown played, and he certainly looked good when that Music City Bowl was already over. But you know, this is a big deal, and it is a situation where, for those who kind of bashed Peyton Thorne for a long time, I mean, this was a guy that until a handful of days ago had never beaten Peyton Thorne out in practice. So it's not like Jarrett Stidham and Bo Nix walking out there. So it'll certainly be an entertaining. I'm really curious. I'll be out in Norman, Oklahoma, but it's 3:30 or 2:30 Central. I will definitely want to try to position myself in front of a TV to where I could see that, because, I mean, that to me is the big coin flip game of the week.
Oh, you're right, and talking about how critical it is. Auburn loses this one. It's not unlikely that they could go into a slide with A&M, Tennessee, and LSU the next three ball games. What am I talking about? With Oklahoma, Georgia, Missouri, the next three games. And, of course, Georgia,
yeah,
Missouri,
I mean,
on the road.
You could argue, I mean, obviously look at Auburn and say they're 2-1, but I would say most people right now would have put a pretty decent mortgage payment on them being 3-0.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be a wild one. Well, have fun out in Norman, man. That should be a good show. Have you been out there for a game?
This is my first time.
Oh, that's
like
great.
I said, I've been to Stillwater. Georgia opened the 2009 season out at Stillwater, so I'm one of these weirdos that's been to Stillwater before Norman.
Oh, that's cool. You get to see the schooner and hear all that. So that'll be a blast. Hope you have a great trip.
Hey, go to Brahms while you're there. That's one of my favorites. It's an Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma based burger and milkshake chain. Very good. Very good. Check out a Brahms while you have a chance.
We have Jim Donnan every Monday and Thursday, so we just had him about an hour ago, and of course he was their offensive coordinator in 85 when Troy Aikman got hurt, and he put Jamail Holloway in and won a national championship, and that was one of the places he mentioned too. So that's good.
I believe Brahms is the milkshake is Ferguson approved. Having tried it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
David, really appreciate it. It's always great to spend a little time with you each week. Have a great trip, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Bill, Dan, Justin, y'all have a great weekend too.
All right, David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. You can read him there, or you can listen to him. Sport Talk on WGOW, which is 2 to 5 our time in Chattanooga each day. We'll get to our first break of hour number 2. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Some days
here on this Thursday afternoon. Again, we always go a little long with that first break because it's David. I mean, all we did was talk SEC games.
I'll pull people behind the curtain a little bit. That's part of the reason why we moved. We wanted to move Tiger Takes.
Absolutely.
Is because, we usually go along with David. We love having Ferguson in the house.
And we'd love to hear, we'd love to hear from callers as well. So, I mean, it was a great move to move Tiger Takes to Wednesdays, which started yesterday with Eugene Asante. Now, a reminder about today.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Last Thursday when we got done, I get in the car and it's like, I hear the start of Tiger Talk. And I went, wow, that's cool. We're rerunning Monday's Tiger Talk.
Tell the truth.
I called you.
To make sure I didn't screw something up.
Well, yeah.
Because I had been running the board.
You run the board.
I've been running the board.
Did you? No, but I thought it was a good idea. And it is. And we are doing that here on ESPN 106.7 on Thursdays, rerunning Tiger Talk from Monday night. So if you listen tonight, it's not a new show. It's this week's show, though. So if you missed any of it, you can hear it on ESPN 106.7 right after the drive on Thursdays.
Tiger Talk replay right after the drive every Thursday here on ESPN 106.7. And if you missed David's segment in the previous segment with David Paschal, check out the podcast presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. I was on Doug's show earlier today, and I sort of alluded to I'm seeing, understandably.
You took Auburn in the points.
I did take Auburn in the points because I can't help myself. But it's.
Oklahoma.
I've seen Auburn down to 2.5. So if you think Auburn's going to win, that's a good bet.
He took us. Doug was giving us 5.5 for
Doug. Doug quoted a number early lines that he sees over the weekend is the ones he puts in there.
Yeah,
and sends them out so everybody has those numbers. They're almost always a little different.
If you shop around right now, you can find Auburn at 3, maybe even under 3. In places you can find it at 2.5. I did take Oklahoma with the hook. I just think it's a close game late.
What was it, 7.5?
7.5. Yeah, I think Tennessee probably wins, but I wouldn't be.
I think Tennessee sets them on 5.
I'm thinking that's just, very likely.
It being on the road is the thing that I just can't get past. Like that's where we'll see. I mean, it's probably and Tennessee.
If Oklahoma plays Tennessee really really close, I'm even more concerned about next week. But let's get through this week first.
But again,
who knows?
Ride the wave.
Yeah. I mean, you would have said that about.
You're right. That's what I'm talking about.
Kentucky's going to get
the
killed.
Up and down, I have no idea.
I mean, heck, we came out of week one being like, well, Auburn killed their FCS team and Cal struggled with theirs.
Yeah.
We were ready to pencil in Peyton Thorne for a new Auburn single season touchdown record after week one.
That is right.
Feels less likely. Now,
so remember, it's been 1 week for Hank. Just like David was saying.
Well, that's sort of where I was going is that I referenced when I before pivoting and picking Auburn in the points, I referenced skepticism among folks who don't have an emotional attachment in this game. Skepticism of Hank Brown.
Hey, David Paschal's an Auburn grad too.
He's an Auburn grad and a Tennessee guy.
Yeah.
Who as he mentioned watched Hank Brown's region. Watch Tennessee private school football in the last couple of years.
That's not exactly the same as it is in some other states. I mean Baylor, McCallie, Lipscomb, those are pretty good schools.
Oh, what was the what's the one the academy Auburn Brentwood Academy. Yeah, sent a lot of kids to college football over the last few years. There's some pretty high level
state is not exactly loaded with the most prospects every year, but they've got some pretty good teams there.
Right. And so but even still, I understand folks that want to see Hank Brown do it against a major conference team or a major conference
defense. You can see it against a quality defense. And this is an SEC defense. Now statistically I think they may be showing up a little better than they wind up, Justin. Mm-hmm. I mean, the things that when people are talking about the numbers from Arkansas, sure, they're averaging almost 600 yards and 46 points or whatever a game, and they only allow 50 yards a game rushing. We'll see when they start playing teams that in this league.
Yeah, I mean, David made good points, and I think Auburn could definitely lose this game on Saturday to Arkansas and struggle and all that. But I would also point out, who's like, oh, yeah, they did well 2 weeks ago against Oklahoma State. Well, they blew that game, and then they also struggled against UAB. UAB was up for a lot of that game, and I think that's kind of getting a little glossed over, especially when you look at Taylen Green and the numbers he had. I mean, he didn't even complete half his passes.
Yeah, of course, what folks that are out there are looking are saying, and look what New Mexico did in the first half. And,
The lines were close.
Sure, but Auburn moved the ball well in that game.
True.
The lines were close to identical in the Auburn, New Mexico, and Arkansas UAB games.
UAB had just gotten blown out by ULM.
Right.
Yeah. It is a worrisome trend for Arkansas in that it seems like if you looked at the last 2 weeks for Arkansas, the best football they played was in the first half of the Oklahoma State game. And you don't want, when you think about your last four football games, you don't want your best half
to have been six quarters ago.
Yes, which is where I think it's a fair way to say, that's sort of where Arkansas is trending. We'll see if that continues going into going into Saturday. But that's a game that I just thought of in the let's see what it looks like when Hank Brown plays an SEC team. Do you know what that sounds like? And this gets lost to history. But there was certainty that in 2019, Auburn was going to go to Gainesville and they were going to stomp Kyle Trask. Remember?
Yes.
Remember? Because Kyle Trask had never started a game since his sophomore year of high school.
He's not good enough to have been a starter.
Felipe Franks beat out Kyle Trask a bunch of times, and Kyle Trask
Dan Mullen didn't believe in Kyle Trask.
Yeah, this is the, and all that Kyle Trask did was go on to have an impressive win that day against Auburn and an impressive season, an impressive career as I think he's in the NFL somewhere as a backup to this day. But that's it does happen. You know, guys, not necessarily come out of the blue, but guys can outperform what they were supposed to be according to the recruiting experts. And that's something Hank Brown has the opportunity to do these next couple of weeks.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join us as we continue here on the Thursday Drive. Again, 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through here on the Drive. Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday, 21 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Let's get back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Rob is up next. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. You know, Arkansas football, you know, and I follow it closely up here in Memphis. It's kind of like somebody who's very, very ill, and family members have already written the obituary. And I'm telling you, the first loss that they have this year to an SEC team, if it's a bad loss, they're going to go crazy because Sam Pittman, everybody loves him. He's a great guy. They said, we want the coach everybody hates and is scared of. Of course, who doesn't?
Well, how are Auburn fans going to react to the first conference loss if it's this Saturday?
Well, same thing. And this is what I'm going to ask y'all, because y'all got your fingers on the pulse down there in Auburn. Are Auburn fans now – because tailgating has become so big at Auburn, look on campus, it's everywhere. Is the Ole Miss, the Grove effect now hitting Auburn because after the last three seasons of just horrible football, are the fans going for the tailgate and are the expectations like I've always had? I'm always expecting Auburn to win every single game. And now it's like, man, we got a great tailgate. Come on by. And the game is not as big a deal because we do not want to go down that road, because I've seen it in other schools in the SEC, and you just can't get out of that hole. And I just think Auburn, this is a big year. But I want to ask all of y'all, how long? I think Freeze is a good coach, but I wish he would just look more excited and not look like, you know, so subdued, Debbie Downer, because Auburn people. Florida's about to go through a big change. Arkansas, I don't see them getting out of this season without a bunch of losses. Freeze, Auburn needs to keep this recruiting class together, because if Auburn doesn't, man, you're down there. You don't want to be. You don't want to be down there with the bottom dwellers, and it's a bad place to be, especially when your two biggest rivals own college football, and now you've brought Texas to the party. I'm just curious, you know, this is a huge game, and if Auburn loses Saturday, which would be horrible, you know what we're going to be hearing. So let's get a win, but what's it, a 2.5-point favorite?
Yeah, it's close, and that tells you how much of a coin flip it is with the game being played at Jordan-Hare. I mean, it's one of those. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about this a little while ago, Dan. I mean, just the how many Auburn-Arkansas games there have been when we have been so wrong about what we thought going in. This one we're thinking, well, it should be a close game. Hadn't been for the last few years.
It felt like Rob snuck like a couple of questions in there. So, like, I would start, like, I don't think Auburn fans – like, I think the hope that the team will be competitive is a big part of the draw every single season.
I agree. I think the stands have been full. The crowds have been really good, and they've been there early and they've stuck around.
There's not a desire. It's not like
a desire to get back to the tailgate.
Yeah, it's not like the Cubs in the 80s or something, right, where you're just there for the party and you don't think the team's going to be very good. I think that there's still an expectation that you're going to see championship caliber football. As I think was true at Tennessee during their dark period, mm-hmm. as was true at Nebraska during their dark period. And that's something that I don't think has changed even with more losses than people would want the last couple of years.
Yeah, 334-321-1390. We got to get back to the phones. We'd love to hear from you as we continue here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg had to step out for just a second. He'll be back in momentarily. So who have we got up next?
We got Mike on the phone. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. I know it's a little premature to start talking about Hughes' replacement, but
yeah,
he loses at home Saturday to Arkansas, which is, you know, it's a coin toss.
It's definitely a possibility.
I'm looking to pro football. I'm looking to somebody with some college experience, with a pedigree. A guy that his dad is in the College Football Coaching Hall of Fame, and he's coaching about 90 miles from here in the XFL, I think it is now, the UFL, Skip Holtz.
Wow. That I was like racking my brain trying to figure you might be talking about. Skip's had a couple of opportunities in college football.
Yeah, I mean,
the college game is becoming more like professional. In fact, I think some of Auburn's players are probably making more money than some of the Birmingham Stallions players.
Well, they may be. I think you're probably right there.
And he's dominating that league. We need a coach that can come in and dominate. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Mike. That's an interesting take. I know it would be terribly, terribly disappointing if Auburn loses Saturday to Arkansas. That would that would drop Hugh Freeze under 500 at Auburn. But it's still 17 games. I don't think
17 games. 17 games with a good recruiting, which is different than the last.
You're right. Night. You're right about that. Well, it's 17 games where it appears that you're at least talent wise, roster wise, you're heading in the direction you need to.
I'm not ready to build my post Hugh Freeze hot board.
No.
Yet.
Nor am I.
Skip Holtz is an interesting suggestion.
That is, you talk about
it's an interesting suggestion.
Out of left field or out of the bleachers or I don't know.
We could weigh the pros and cons of Skip Holtz as an Auburn candidate another day.
334-321-1390.
Rain Man.
Hey, Rain Man.
Hello, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm all right.
All right. You know, it's way too early to talk about getting rid of the current head coach. You don't want to turn into the program that fires its head coach every 2 years.
No, you don't.
Like we've seen some others do. That being said, I think Auburn fans are going to be disappointed this weekend.
All right. Well, give me your thought process.
I'm going to give you a couple of key reasons here.
All right.
If you throw out our 73-3 victory over Alabama A&M, and their 70-0 victory over whatever Division II team it was, and you look at strictly Division I opponents, statistically, they average 539 yards a game to our 396. They give up 369. We give up 390. They convert 67% of their third downs. We convert 52% of ours. They have an average time of possession of 32 minutes a game. We have an average time of possession of 22 minutes a game. They're going to be able to move the ball on us, I think, much more effectively than we are on them. There is a bright spot, however.
All right.
They are 5 of 9 on field goals, and mm-hmm. we are 2 of 3. So statistically speaking, their field goal percentage is not as good as ours. So if it's close, there's a chance, perhaps, that works out for.
Well, Rain Man, we talked about the kicker a little bit earlier in the show. He missed three in the final 12 minutes and overtime from within.
Towns missed was from 61.
Yeah. Well, no, like I said, if it's close and it comes down to that, my question would be, why did we only have three attempts in three games?
Because Auburn scored a lot of touchdowns.
Against nobody's.
Well, I know, but they've scored more touchdowns than they have been in field goal range.
Were they supposed to stop at the two to kick a field goal?
Like, yeah, the other thing.
I'm just saying, we should have got some more field goals against that team we lost to.
Well,
you could absolutely.
You need to be in field goal range.
Yeah, empty.
No, absolutely.
I mean, you need to cross the 50.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why they made the change at quarterback. The other thing is
four interceptions.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot that could help with that, but
you know, your stats
weird,
are based
right?
on. I mean, I appreciate the stats are against D1 competition, but it's just two games, and in two games, you know, the stats can be skewed an awful lot. I think it's going to be close, and you may be right. Auburn could very well be disappointed Saturday.
Appreciate the phone call, Rain Man.
334-321-1390. Oh, did we? Yeah. Pat is up next. Thought we'd lost him for a second. Hey, Pat. I think we did lose him. Pat, if you get a chance, give us a call back. We'll get to John before we get to our final break of the afternoon. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I'll be concise because of your time constraints. I heard the prior caller. I'm sticking with Coach Freeze. It's ridiculous. I don't feel great about Saturday, to be very honest. I do have a question and one thought. Mm-hmm. My one thought is maybe at some point Auburn can arrange to have a schedule where they have, I don't know, like all October home games and we don't have to sit out and bake in the heat. I see it's supposed to be 90 Saturday. I can't think of.
Yep.
I think I'm watching this one on TV, guys. I can't think of anything more miserable than sitting in the heat while you watch, wait for the TV timeouts. But I had one question. Whatever happened to Shadow?
We have, you know, we have not heard from Shadow for quite a while. He'd had some health problems. As a matter of fact, I meant to ask Doug about that the last time I talked to him.
Hope he's doing well.
Hope he is.
Hope he can hear us.
He had some health issues, and it's been last year since we heard from him. So, if anybody knows, we'd appreciate an update.
Perfect. And one other final quick question, and I'll let you go. You guys going to have Sonny Smith on in the winter for Hoops?
Oh, absolutely. If Sonny can stand putting up with us, we definitely love to have Sonny on.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to basketball season. You guys have a great day.
All right, thanks a lot, John. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon.
A little exciting news today, by the way, about an exhibition in basketball. Might talk about that. And promote the Auburn Observer when we come back.
We will do that. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
At Reynolds Outdoors, they're all about hunting and fishing.
As you mentioned, Dan, Auburn earlier today announcing an exhibition game, charity exhibition game coming up. So, I mean, as Auburn will host Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, really exciting stuff announced earlier today. I guess that's a new rule, right, that was signed. I mean, they cited it.
August.
They cited it, just a month ago, the rule cited in the Auburn press release that teams can play exhibitions against other Division I programs now if it's for a charitable cause.
Well, it's a whole lot better than those ridiculous secret exhibitions that they used to have that the numbers would get out, information would get out. Now you can at least raise some money for charity with these games.
So Friday, November 1st at 7 p.m. at Neville Arena, Auburn will host FAU. Auburn University Melton Scholars Program will be the beneficiary of the charity event. The rule is, I believe they August 1st, 2024. NCAA Committee for Legislative Relief approved a recommendation to permit an institution to conduct two permissible exhibition games in the sport of basketball against a D1 institution for the purpose of raising funds for catastrophic events, social justice initiatives, or general medical expenses, and the Melton Scholars Program qualifies as a cause that Auburn can champion with a game like
this. It's a scholarship program seeking to create more opportunities for minorities at Auburn University. In the press release, not only did you hear from Bruce Pearl and Auburn university vice president who's overseeing the program, Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley had a long quote about how much this means to him and how excited he's seeing that Auburn basketball is going to be getting involved for that for a good cause.
Coach Pearl mentioned he thinks that maybe people hearing about this game or going to this game could even inspire conversation about donating directly to the Melton Scholars Program or trying to advocate for them in some way.
It's a win-win for everybody here. You know, you get a good game, an exhibition to kind of see where you are. It's a very quality opponent. Fans get to go attend it, and money goes to a great cause. So I think I'm glad the NCAA's had a few here recently in the end of their life cycle of good decisions. This is one of them. A few, but they've had a couple of them.
Well, it's good to hear. Justin, before we're out of time, let everybody know about The Observer, what you got coming up.
Yeah, we've got the podcast tomorrow morning. Dan and I are going to preview Auburn, Arkansas. Mailbag came out today. I did that a day early this week. Ton of stuff on Auburn, Arkansas throughout the week, and we'll have coverage all this weekend. AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there.
Sounds good. We are out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Coach Dunn with us tomorrow. Ooh. We'll see if we can get a little Arky flavor as well.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to tomorrow's show. But we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.